is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we have a very special episode for you. We have two coaches who have already been on the show with us, Joe Harris and Jeff DiPelto. And then we have with us from the Crown Refs Podcast, Paul Diaspera. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
You bet. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Absolutely. We're excited to have the three of you on, have a little bit of a roundtable discussion about officiating, coaching, and how we can continue to help those two groups work together to make our game a much better game. So I want to start here by talking a little bit about, from an official's perspective, Paul, what are some of the things that you appreciate about a coach when it comes to their game management and the way they interact with you as an official?
Well, we love someone who focuses primarily on coaching their team, right? Someone who's always trying to make their team better. With regards to us, a respectful approach with us, just like humans would interact, right? I mean, I know we're under the umbrella of sports and basketball, but, you know, we appreciate coaches showing class and courtesy and asking questions, you know, not yelling from across the court. Just when they show effective communication, it's the best way for us to collaborate and work together. I think, you know, we have to be together for probably 2 hours. So we want to have some kind of a working relationship, a positive working relationship. So, you know, when coaches exhibit this, we appreciate it.
So Jeff and Joe, what do you guys try to do as you're in a game and you're doing out there and you're trying to figure out how you can, you know, your interactions with the officials? How do you go about and approach those things on a game basis when you head into a game? What are you thinking in terms of dealing with and interacting with the officials?
I would say for me, what I like to do first is make sure I have all the names of the officials. And so we have three officials down in North Carolina. Make sure I have the names down. So I'm not, if I'm trying to get their attention, I'm not yelling like, hey, you, hey, ref, hey, stripe. You know, I think that goes into what Paul's saying about the respect factor. You know, I want to respect them enough to know, you know, who I'm trying to talk to throughout a game. I think the other thing is really as a coach, just trying to pick my spots. I'm not going to argue every call. You know, I say this to officials all the time. If I agree or disagree, number one, I understand they probably have the best angle to any call, whether I agree or disagree with it. And, I'm never going to convince them, that they saw something different than what I saw. And so I think, you know, as a coach, whether you agree or disagree, being able to let it go and move on to the next play. I mean, that's something I think as coaches, we tell our players all the time. And so as coaches, we have to be able to do that with officials. And even especially like a lot of times when I'm having that conversation and I feel like I'm being respectful of officials, they'll say, hey, you know what? I missed that one. And I'll often acknowledge, you know what? I haven't coached a perfect game either. So don't worry about it. I appreciate you acknowledging that. And so, yeah, I think it's just definitely acknowledging that the officials have a really difficult job where on a good night, there's still probably going to be half the fans in the stands that are disagreeing or, you know what I mean? You know, thinking that they didn't have a great night.
You know, both of you guys have hit it right on the head with this because both you, Paul and Jeff, you know, it's about how you treat people. And I think, you know, we're talking about treating officials and officials treating coaches, you always want to be respectful. I mean, you're not going to agree with everything. That's just the way life is, and that's the way the game is. But you can't let it hang on there, and you've got to be able to move on. And like Jeff, he said this, that you're not going to argue every call, and I don't think you should. And I think there's times when you need to stand up for your players, and there's times when you need to move on. And, you know, some people, some coaches just have a tough time with that, just like some officials have a tough time with that. But really, if you have a positive approach, it's almost like Ralph and Sam, the sheepdog and the wolf. They go check in, they go to work, and they argue, and then at the end of the day, they're still friends with each other. And I think if that's, you know, the personal aspect that we miss out on sometimes.
Paul, how do you feel about getting to know, I'm sure as the more games you ref, and especially if you're in a particular league frequently, you get to kind of know those coaches. Do you find that when you have a prior relationship with a coach where you're kind of on a first name basis and you see those coaches all the time, do you feel like that respect level rises when you have somebody that you have a previous relationship with? Have you experienced that in your career?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the more experience I gain through the college ranks, I'm able to see coaches more and more, and I've had them multiple years now for consecutive years. So in my experience, my relationships have all, well, I wouldn't say all, but a large majority of them get better. And I think the more I work games with these coaches, I think they, you know, the more mutual respect there is, again, for the most part.
I guess it could go the other way too.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's been cases, you know, I've had there's every year once or twice you have things that happen and you move on from them, but for the most part the respect level has continued to grow the more I work with the same coaches.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you said, Jeff, about getting to know the officials' names, that's a huge thing. And I equate it to whether you're a teacher, I do it with my basketball camp, where you know a kid's name, it's much easier to interact with them and deal with them and have that relationship when you could say, instead of, hey, you can call that kid, or in this case, an official, by name. And it just sets up better camaraderie, as opposed to just, you know, as you said, Jeff, yelling across the court, hey, you. You know, nobody likes to be referred to that way, or hey, ref. I think when you have that respect of knowing the person's name, I think that's an important piece of it. And then the other thing that goes along with that is, you know, you talked about yelling across the court, and I know that's one of the things, just in what I've seen, and I'm not a huge yeller, so I'm usually not yelling at an official from across the court. I think from my perspective, I know when I've been able to have better interactions with officials, it's when, you know, it's a dead ball situation and the official's standing right in front of me on the bench, and you can kind of have a quiet conversation that isn't going to be noticed by the whole crowd. I get the sense, and Paul, tell me if I'm on the right track here, that you're going to be much more receptive to listening to what a coach has to say when you're having a quiet conversation during a, let's say, a free throw situation, as opposed to, you know, a shouting match from one side of the floor to the other.
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier coaches should pick their spots. You know, I think their spots become more valuable the less they have. The more spots they try to have, obviously the value is going to come down. So if they time it well and they get over to us, or they call us over, yeah, at a dead ball or after a timeout or when the play is settled and when we have time to actually have a conversation, a lot of times they want a response when we don't have time to give it because we have a live ball, right? I'm running down from trail to lead, and he wants to know why that wasn't a foul. And, you know, I'm sprinting by. I'm trying to catch up to a fast break. I can't provide an explanation there. So, you know, it comes back to timing and picking your spots. Me personally, when I look to approach a coach, if I have to approach a coach with any issues, I find the best time to approach them is following a timeout. So they call a timeout, or whoever calls a timeout, and after they've spent the duration of the timeout coaching their team, once the team breaks away and the timeout, their end is officially done, you know, that's when I feel like I see a big green light, and I find that they're most open to be like constructive and have a real, real good conversation.
Joe and Jeff, what do you guys think about that?
You know, honestly, that's probably the best way to deal with stuff, whether it's on the court as a coach or whether it's on the court as the official, because like Paul said, a lot of times, you know, I think when younger coaches are, and myself included, when you're barking at the official as he goes by, and do you really want a response? You want him to stop the game and turn around and tell you, no, I missed it, or it was a great play, you know, or the guy was out of position. It just can't happen. So I think that goes back to what we've said early, is respecting each other for the job they're doing. I have a job to coach my kids. Officials have a job on the floor to keep it clean and all that stuff. But there's times and places when, and Paul said this about picking your spot, there's time and a place to do that. And, you know, we're not always going to agree, and that's fine. But we just need, you need to get that over with and move on.
Jeff, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I like the idea of coming out of a timeout because, you know, it's a time when you've kind of focused on your team. And I think at the end of the day, that's, as a coach, probably where your energy is best spent anyways, whether, you know, it's one of those things you actually can control. You can't control how the whistle's going to go on a particular night. And that's, you know, I mean, my early mentors said, just focus on the things you can control. And as a coach, you can't necessarily control if your kids are going to make shots, but you can, you have more control over them than probably anybody else on the court. So, and I, like I said, the timing wise, I think it does make a lot of sense. I was trying to think back on the season when I've had the most kind of productive conversations, and it definitely falls in line with what Paul was saying.
So go ahead, Paul.
I just wanted to say thank you. That's it.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need that mutual respect.
Of course.
All right, so let's think about what are – let's go with this question to Paul. What's something that the average coach doesn't understand or doesn't maybe realize about your job as an official? Can you point to one or two things that you are aware of all the time when you're preparing for a game, when you're in a game – something that maybe the average coach who maybe has never put on the striped shirt and blown the whistle doesn't understand about officiating a game? Is there one or two things that you can point to that might fit under that category?
I just think how hard we work at it, how much we study and work on our craft just like they do. I think we're actually a lot alike because we are part of the game. We're just on different sides of the game. And also, I think – to go back on how hard we work, how technical we get as far as improving our signals, improving our mechanics, our positioning, studying the rules, seeking out mentorship, watching film. I mean, there's so many different ways and responsibilities that referees have in order to improve at their craft. So, you know, we're putting in the work just like them.
All right. So talk about, I want to just kind of break in here and let you do a little self-promotion here about what you have going with Crown Ref. So I think it's a perfect time for you to be able to talk about, because it goes right along with your answer of improving your craft. So can you talk a little bit about your Crown Refs podcast and your Crown Refs Instagram and social media and all the things that you're trying to do to improve the world for referees and give them a place where they can go to do some of that learning that you just described?
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Crown Refs is a network of officials dedicated to improving their craft. I started Crown Refs in 2018 on Instagram. I started out creating basketball content for the referee to improve, and I chose to distribute my content through social media. In previous organizations, they chose websites or, you know, cams. So this is just another form of education that I've been able to tap into. So once I established on Instagram and built a little bit of a foundation and started to establish my brand and the direction I wanted to go, that's when I started to get a little bit wide and go across all platforms. So that's when I expanded out to Facebook and then to Twitter and LinkedIn, started making videos, putting them up on YouTube, wanted to really give myself the most at-bats per se, to be able to reach other officials, because not all officials are on Instagram. There's a ton on Facebook. Some of the ones that are on Facebook aren't on Twitter. So I started to really think about expansion about 4 or 5 months into my development as a content creator. That's when a friend recommended that I start a podcast. I've been hearing about the impact of podcasts across all industries and the growing industry that podcasting is. I think we're really at the forefront of it really getting really big. So that's when he was like, look, you're putting out a lot of good content. You're starting to build a bit of a community. I think you should, if you download Anchor, it's an app, you can have a podcast out tomorrow and it could be on Spotify, iTunes and all the other podcasting platforms. And I'm like, sure, okay. I mean, I never thought I would want to be a podcaster or have a show, but I almost felt a duty to do it because of what I was already building through video form, photos, text, and all the different features that, you know, social media provided. This was just back to width again, going wide, giving people another option, allowing people to consume my content when they're in the car or when they're at the gym. When you're, you know, when you're doing something else, you're able to consume audio. If you're on your phone, that's, you're looking at videos. You can't really do more than one, you know, two things at once. So the podcast has been great so far. I fell in love with it. You know, I have a music background. I studied studio production at Purchase College a long time ago. Thought I would never do anything with the music degree. But now that I'm getting back into podcasting and the editing of sound, I'm coming back full circle. So it's pretty cool to have my basketball career tie into my content career pretty much. That's, yeah. I'm at the start of it right now. So podcasts, I just want to really continue to develop. I just recently had a couple NBA names on it. Al Batista, who's the NBA's regional scout for officials. And also a couple nights ago, I had Ronnie Nunn, who's a 14-year NBA official, retired NBA official and the former director of officiating for the NBA. We did a really nice podcast the other night. So I'm really trying to continue to grow and get more and more guests on. I think that'll only help build a brand, build awareness, and definitely, you know, distribute my word and my belief to as many officials as possible. I'm just trying to help officials grow and get better and push the culture forward, right? Because we really don't have anything like this through social media. There's been some people and organizations to dibble in it, and, you know, people have put out books and a lot of great stuff. And this is just something, this is just the evolution of that, I guess. That's where we're at.
Yeah, one more thing. What's the response been out there from officials? What are you hearing from people?
I mean, I've just had the most overwhelming response is through direct message on Instagram. I have so many messages of just people really pouring out their heart to me with what the content has done and how it's inspired them and impacted them and provided tips for them to get better. And once, you know, I'm getting testimonials of posts that I put up like a month ago to when that actually happened in their game and they were able to use the strategy that I had created or shared, I should say, with them and able to apply it in their game and see an impact. So, I mean, honestly, I'm really blessed with all of the feedback and the response I've gotten. And it only inspires me to continue to do it and continue to create more. That's my fuel.
Nice. Love it. All right, coaches. So what are one or two of the most common calls or types of calls that you see in games that tend to get you upset or that you sometimes think are called maybe differently from the way you would want to see them called? Is there anything, any interpretations of calls or things that you remember that you've experienced where you're like, it's every time there's this type of call, it seems like it's going a different way than what I think it is, or maybe it goes against something I'm trying to teach my kids to do. Is there anything that fits into that particular description?
Well, goodness. You know, I think probably, I don't know if there's anything in particular, but something that sticks in my mind is, you know, each year we get a point of emphasis for the rules from the National Federation. And I think early on in the season, you know, that's such a big emphasis with both officials and coaches. And as the year goes on, it kind of, you see that kind of just wane a little bit. And so there's just a lot of tinkering with the rules, it seems like, in a sense. So I don't know if that really answers the question or not, but, you know, like if it's rough post play, you know, if you're going to call it, then you got to call it all the time. And sometimes, you know, whether it's a hand check out front or whether it's, you know, the appointment emphasis is that. And, you know, my seat is completely different than, and I'm teaching our guys to play pretty aggressively and play hard all the time. And you know, now I think, Paul, that's one thing I'm loving hearing from you is about how hard you've worked at your craft, because that's what I want. out of our guys. And so if we've got everybody on the floor working their butt off, I mean, that's a win and for everybody. And that's when you don't really notice some of those big plays going one way or the other, because kids and officials and coaches are all coaching hard, reffing hard, playing hard. And that's really how it should be. So don't know if I don't know if I have a particular answer for that. Jeff, what's sticking in your mind?
So I would say, interestingly, and I think you see this in the high school game, certainly more than college, but the disparity in size of some of the players in different positions and how that can affect some calls. So just to give an example, on my team this year, I was very lucky to have three guys. Well, I have a 6'8 freshman, a 6'10 big guy, and a 7-foot big guy. And those big guys often got called for over the back when they were really just kind of bigger and stronger. You know, and then vice versa, we had a couple smaller guards that kind of would get into position, get thrown around. And I think it's really difficult to judge when it's somebody just not really being strong enough to make plays and when there's a foul or violation. And so it was, interestingly, I kind of saw it on both ends. Like there were games this year where I felt like our big guys weren't able to play as physical just because they were so much bigger than the guys we were playing against. And then there were times where our guards were, you know, a lot smaller and not as strong, and they weren't able to play. They were getting taken advantage of because they weren't as strong as some of the guys they're guarding against. So just, I think that's more of an observation than anything else. And I think that's what makes high school, you know, more difficult to officiate than definitely a college game, where, you know, if it's a Division III game or a Division II or Division I, at least you know everybody on that court is Division III players or Division II players, Division I's. And I think, like, on my particular team, I had everything from kids that played that won't play college basketball to kids who are going to have a chance to probably play in the NBA at some point. And so it's a really big disparity between the size and talent level and everything, that which makes it official – makes it difficult to officiate a game like ours.
So, Paul, can you talk about that discrepancy where maybe you have two teams who aren't evenly matched, and maybe it's a game where clearly one team is physically superior? Like, do you find those types of games to be more difficult to referee, or does it not make a difference? How do you feel about that particular situation where you have these sort of physical mismatches, whether that's team versus team or just player versus player?
You know, it's really a game by game basis. It just depends that night what happened, because I've seen every type of matchup on paper go every which way, you know, opposite of what you thought it was. So, you know, a more physical team, you would think that they would be able to control the boards and draw more fouls and all that, but like I said, I just go game by game. So
understood. All right. Here's a question that I'm not quite sure how to really look at this particular question, but I know one of the things that I see, because I'm not currently coaching at the high school or college level. So I'm coaching a lot of my kids' youth basketball, and specifically right now at this time of year, I'm coaching AAU basketball. And one of the things that I see that tends to bug me as a coach is, and it goes to everything that we've been talking about, it goes to what you're trying to do, Paul, for sure. And it's one of the things that I worry about with officials is, you know, you're at these AAU tournaments and you have referees that ref 8 or 9 games in a row. They've been there for 9 hours. And by the time they get to their 9th game, you know, they're barely moving up and down the floor. And I think that's one of the things that I worry about, is that then there becomes this perception, unlike the perception of what you're trying to do. You know, you see some officials that just, you know, they've been there so long and there's so many AAU tournaments, and you end up with maybe a lower quality official who's not putting in the time or their craft. Do you worry at all about that, Paul, in terms of the perception of officials just based on the youth basketball system, the way we have it set up today, that, you know, a lot of these officials are having to ref 8, 9, 10 games because there's so many tournaments and there's just a shortage of officials.
Well, I don't worry about much, to be honest, in general. So I definitely don't worry about this. I don't worry about things that I cannot control. So as far as the perception of officials, with regards to AAU, look, there's more games than there are officials. So it's a booming business. I got in about eight or nine years ago. It was a little bit post-recession, a couple years after the recession of 08. So it wasn't as booming, but 7, 8 years later, there's just so many tournaments, so many games, and just not enough officials to fill them. Or there's just barely enough. So you right. need guys to work 9 games. So part of signing up for an AAU tournament, you got to have the awareness to know that you're going to get officials that work multiple games and that are there all day. And that's just part of the deal. That's just the way it is. If you're looking to find a higher rated official, then it's going to happen in a high school playoff game or, you know, a state tournament or up the line in college, you'll have higher rated officials. But AAU is youth sports. So the majority of the time you're going to get a youth official and an official. A lot of times in these high level 17U AAU games, you have an official that is working modified during the season. And this is his 8th game of the day and he's working a high level game in the spring, which is great for him if he's looking to improve. But coaches and players also need to know that that's part of the game. That's part of the culture of spring tournaments.
Yeah, no question about it. Yep, definitely a lot of games for sure. There's no doubt about that. I want to ask you a little bit about, and this goes to any of you guys can jump in on this, and I think we're all on the same page when it comes to this question, but I think we're coming at it from a couple of different perspectives. And that is, when you watch basketball, particularly NBA basketball today, there's a lot of, you know, every time the whistle blows, there's guys making faces and guys questioning the calls and guys running 20 feet away from the call and putting their arms up in the air. And we all know that as both coaches and I'm sure as officials, that's not what we want to see. And yet that's what our kids who play the game see all the time when they're watching NBA basketball. So I guess the first question, let's throw it to Paul and say, how do you try to go about dealing with that? If you see it, how do you handle that particular situation? Obviously, if it's something that crosses the line, you know, you give the player a technical and you move on and you try to explain. But if you start to see that come about, like, how do you go about trying to either A, talk to the player, or B, talk to that player's coach to let them know that, hey, we don't want to see that kind of stuff out there on the floor?
Well, I always like to get over to the coach when a player starts misbehaving. I'll talk to the player and I'll try to diffuse any potential problems. I'll try to put out the spark before it becomes a forest fire. And when it becomes a forest fire, then we have to call the fire department because we can't handle it. So I like to put out all these little sparks. Right?
That's a good line. That's a good analogy, Paul. I like that one.
But I like to bring that information to the coach. It's also providing a courtesy to the coach to let you know, hey, coach, I'm not giving your player a technical foul. I might not say this, but you know, I'm bringing the issue to you so you can do your job as a coach. I'm not telling a coach to do his job. That doesn't sound right, but that's what's happening. I'm transferring the responsibility and the duties to the coach. So now the coach can take care of him. If the coach refuses to, that's on him. The coach was told, I maintain open lines of communication. I brought the coach the information and it's on him. So now the next time the player were to act up, it's just going to be a technical foul. So I use proactive officiating and I use preventative measures to try to diffuse the situation. We want to be diffusers. You know, we don't want to be igniters. It's a skill to not be able to give a technical foul. Sometimes it's out of our control. Sometimes, you know, a lot of times it's out of our control. It just happens. There's nothing.
So Joe, how do you try to get your players to understand what you expect in terms of their dealings is the wrong word, but how do you want your players to interact with officials? I'm pretty sure I can guess what the answer is, but I'm going to let you go.
I'm interested to hear your answer considering your son's in the NBA. So.
To be honest with you, I've been known to be pretty direct and to let our guys know that that's really not their job. And I'm the only one speak to an official.
And nice job, coach.
That, thank you. And that, you know what, if you're going to do that, then there's a seat over here for you, just like anybody, next to the band, because, you know, quite honestly, we're not doing that in this program, and we're not going to do it ever again. And, you know, Paul, you're right on with, you know, if there's a, and that's what I appreciate about, I think experience comes into this big factor here. You know, when you think about what we're talking about, young coaches, I remember when I first started, I'm fiery, but I was really fiery when I was younger. And it was like the louder I coached, the better I was. And the same thing on the same thing on the officials. And I think some young officials the same way, you know, they try to control things too much. But then as you get that experience, and you realize that, hey, we got to work together. This is part of the game. And part of it might be I disagree with you. Part of it might be you disagree with me. But at the end of the day, it's over. And so I'm very direct with our kids. And, you know, it's like you are not talking to the official in that tone of voice. The only person that's going to talk to him is our captain. And if you can't handle it, then we'll find somebody else that will step into that role, because you are not going to bark at people like that. That's, and you know what? I'm more worried about them, because what they've done when they do that, if they roll their eyes or, and this is what bugs me about the NBA, is that how about hustling back on defense and making a difference? You turn it over and you don't get a call. You thought you got raped down the arm, and then all of a sudden you throw your arms up and you're the last guy down the floor. Well, you'd be the first guy out on the next whistle. I'll tell you that right now.
Jeff, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with Joe. I mean, you definitely set the tone in practices. You know, our kids have done a pretty good job of experiencing really bad officiating every day in practice, because I am the worst official in America.
I love it.
And they cannot complain to me in practice or they get on the line. So we set that tone there. But no, honestly, in games, if I see guys kind of shrugging about calls, most of the time, the officials get it right. And so I'm not afraid to, if I see them making a gesture, I'll yell at them, run back on defense. They got that right. Like, I would have made the same call. And so I think that's another way, hopefully, me and my staff show that, you know, we're partnering with the officials. But the other piece of it is our kids do a pretty good job of coming over to me in a game and say, you know, I've talked to them, or can you, they definitely understand. And I think it's a tone that we set, like, it is our job to communicate with the officials, not yours. And even our game captains would probably come over and say, hey, coach, can you ask the official to watch the hand check? Can you ask the official to watch the push in the back? And so I think it is about setting a tone for your players that, you know, if anybody's going to communicate, it's our job to do it. And you got to trust me that I'm going to be able to do it in an effective way to have your guys back, but also do it where I'm not going to show up the official, because that doesn't help anybody out.
Jeff, I really like what you just said there, talking about like having the kids come tell you to say something to the official, because like this year I had a group of kids, of the boys at the beginning of the year, where they were getting all upset, and I coach middle school basketball, just so you know. So it's, you know, middle schoolers tend to be a little bit more, they don't understand. They were even worse, I think, with the whole getting upset about calls. So I talked to some of them, and it's like, as the season progressed, they got way better, and they came over and talked to me and said, hey, you know, can you ask him to say, hey, or to keep an eye on the guy pushing me in the back? And I definitely think the officials respected that a lot more as the year went on, that they seemed to understand that the kids were trying to not get upset, and they were coming to talk to me and let me deal with it. And you know, that made me feel good too, because the kids trusted me to do so. So I really like what you said there, Jeff.
Well, and I think the other thing too, when the kids know that you're going to tell them if they did, like if they don't like a call, they don't agree with it, but then they look over to you and you tell them like, yeah, you did that.
That's true.
I think it helps you as a coach, the coach-player relationship, but also the official relationship. Because the biggest one that I always get kids looking over for me, especially with our big guys, will be if they get called for a travel.
Like, no one ever thinks they travel.
Feet, man. I had to say, yeah, nobody travels, right?
Listen,
they do watch the – no one of the NBA travels, so yeah. You got to understand that's where they get it from, right?
It's because they get a bonus step.
That's right, no doubt. No doubt about that.
Oh, man.
All right. So, Paul, you, I know, had a couple questions that you wanted to to ask the coaches. So I think this would be a good time for you to just maybe throw a question or two at Joe and Jeff that you shared with me, just to kind of get their perspective on those questions that you wanted to ask.
Sure. And I want to ask a couple questions, and I'm not testing your knowledge. I'm not trying to show you up. Again, I want to provide clarity for coaches, players, and fans on, you know, rule clarifications, what we think about when we make decisions, you know, and I think all this is, will be good for the game. And, you know, if I can provide value to a coach and a player on what not to do to commit a foul, then that's going to help them out and it's going to help the game. So one of the questions is, coaches, do you know what a legal defender is, and do you know what legal guarding position is? Do you know what it takes to for a defender to be legal?
All right, the whole panel stumped.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Certainly, I guess we probably practice that every day, but maybe give us some guidelines on that. How about that?
Well, let me throw it back at you. For a defender to be a legal defender, meaning he's not doing anything wrong, he's not doing anything illegal, he's guarding a guy. What do you think one characteristic is? What does he need to establish? What does he need to do?
He's got to establish his own position before the guy moves.
He's got to establish, first of all, 2 feet on the floor, and he needs to be facing the opponent. So he's got to be square to the opponent. So that's how you establish a legal guarding position. And I think there's a misconception with what a defender is able to do. I hear a lot of times, oh, he's moving. He's moving. You know, we don't use that verbiage in the book. You're allowed to move. You know, on like block charge plays, when a guy takes a charge, a lot of times a coach's response is, but ref, the defender was moving. You guys know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, so let me ask you this question. Are you allowed to move when you take a charge? If
yes,
defender
you can get, yes. I'm going to say yes on that.
Yes.
Because there's been situations where we'll have a guy wall up on defense. He's in the legal guarding position, but then he jumps vertically and can still take a charge.
Yeah, I mean, we love when defenders jump straight up. Verticality, you said it, vertically. Yep, that's what we're looking for. So let me just provide clarity for you. So a defender needs to have 2 feet on the ground facing the opponent to establish a legal guarding position, okay? And I'm just going to talk about the block charge play a little bit. So a defender, once he establishes legal guarding position on a ball handler, is able to move and take a charge if he's moving laterally, obliquely, or backing up. The only thing they can't do is move forward into contact. All right, and this is on a dribbler.
Okay.
On an airborne shooter, once the offensive player is now airborne, this is where that terminology, he can't move, is a little bit more relevant. Now he can no longer move laterally or obliquely, but he can move backwards. So once a player is in the air, you can't move to the side anymore. You can't move
right
diagonally back. You can back up, so you can move. So that's another time, like a player will take a charge and be backing up, and I'll hear a coach say, ref, he's moving. Yes, coach, did you have him moving forward? No, I had him moving backwards. Okay, that's legal. So I just want to talk about that legal guarding position. Let me ask you this. What is the best response an official has ever given you?
Oh, man.
Does any of them stand out in your mind?
I mean, honestly, it's just been acknowledging that they've missed one. Like,
yes.
You know what, coach, you're right. I missed that one.
I missed it. And yeah, you can't really come up with an answer for that.
There's nothing else you can say. Okay. And it's like, I've missed it, and I'll watch it next time. Or I'm sorry. And it's just like, there's nothing else you can say. Okay. And it just kind of makes you move on. Now,
yeah,
I say
if we
four,
go back,
four times in a row, then you start to get.
But if we go back to that, the very beginning of the conversation about, you know, having that respectful approach and working together, when a ref turns to you and says, you know, I missed it. And then moving on, you know, I think that's where some coaches get hung up on. Well, yeah, you missed it. You're horrible. As opposed to, okay, well, how do you answer that? You can't. I mean, you can't, because you can't have that running conversation.
Yeah, that's why if we're open and we could be real transparent and our own worst critic and admit our mistakes, then we hold the leverage, because we're letting you know we made a mistake, coach, and we're going to get better. So that really pretty much eliminates any kind of response for the most part, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I have a question for you. I have a question for you, Paul. This is a call that I see a lot, and I just want to get your legal interpretation of how this play should be called, because I see it frequently, and a lot of times I feel like it goes against my team for whatever reason, and I probably just don't see it when it goes for my team. But the situation that happens is that I'll have a player who, in my mind, is in legal guarding position, so they've established a solid guarding position in front of their offensive player, and they have their hands straight up in the air, and then the offensive player puts their shoulder down into my defensive player, which causes the defensive player to kind of bend forward with their arms, and then the player goes up for the shot, and then my player gets called for a foul, even though the offensive player initiated that contact with their shoulder, causing the player's arms, who previously were straight up, to come down as the shooter goes up. So from a referee's perspective, how do you handle, and obviously you can't see the situation, and you know every situation is a little bit different, but just what's the legal interpretation of that type of play? How, if it went on the way I described it, how should that particular play be called?
Coach, excellent, excellent question, and excellent, and a hard play to officiate. Is this the play that happened in the 2012 playoffs with LeBron James and Roy Hibbert? Do you remember that play?
Yes. I mean, I remember those. Yeah, I remember those exact situations.
We don't like to remember that year because he wasn't playing for Cleveland, but we'll talk about it, I guess.
So can we say this is the play we're talking about?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we have the offensive player initiating the contact, right? Defender is just waiting for him in a legal guarding position, jumps straight up, which he's entitled to do. Verticality means he owns the space from the feet to the ceiling as long as they go straight up. So, but what happens here, the offensive player, you know, dips the shoulder a little bit, initiates that contact into the stomach chest region, which causes the defender to then not to say lose his verticality, but arms come down. And that's going to give the visual like it's a foul on the defense because the arms are coming down right upon that, you know, point of contact. So it really does look like it's a defensive foul. However, offensive initiated contact, and that's the reason why the defender lost his verticality. So it's either going to be a no call or it's going to be an offensive foul, depending on the severity of the contact and the displacement by the offense.
Understood. I think that's the interpretation that I always try to go with. It's not always the interpretation that I receive back from the official when I ask them the question. So I just wanted to make sure that I had an understanding of what the legality of that particular play. Thanks for clearing that up. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Let me just add a layer to that. What also can happen on this play is why you're getting called for a foul is maybe your defender is jumping forward. So, you know, jumping from one spot, but landing in a spot about a foot or 2 feet in front, showing proof that defender actually jumped forward. And remember, jumping forward is not a legal guarding position because that's a push. Another thing you might see is the defender is not allowed to jump A to B. Mr. Harris, I know you know A to B because it's very frequent in the NBA. That's a lot of times it's a block and the ref will have the reason because it's A to B. Defender jumps from one spot in the air from A, we call that. Then the contact happens at B to the side of him. So that's usually a foul in the defense.
Unless it's game one of the Western Conference semifinals with the Rockets and the Warriors, then it's not a foul.
Well, and that would be an A to B, if I'm correct. That was on the now infamous 3-point play that Kyle Guy had in was it the Final Four of the Elite Eight this year, where
Butler
jumps in and it was blatant. I mean, it was easy to see on the replay, but it was just really tough timing for that call.
I wish I had it in memory. I was probably creating a post at that time.
There you go. There it is. That's why we're up till midnight, well, call, 1 a.m. doing all our stuff.
I thought the call was right because I needed Virginia to win.
That's it. Well, I totally understand. That might have been a homer call, Joe.
Hey, I just wish they'd had one in 2014 like that when Joe was playing for
Jones.
That's
right. Exactly. Jeff, I know when you and I talked, you had a question just about how games are officiated in situationally when situations in the game change in terms of maybe the time and score. So I don't know if you want to ask that question of Paul that you asked of me, because I think it's a question that a lot of coaches have for officials.
Yeah, Paul, we had a really interesting situation in one of our early games this year where we were down a point. It was a situation off a dead ball. You knew we were going to foul.
I know it's coming. Keep going.
Yeah, the other team goes for the home run ball, and their guy gets about a half step. And on the catch, our guy comes and chops down on the hands, and it's the intentional foul. I disagreed with it. I ended up getting ejected. It was my first time I've ever been tossed from a game.
Oh, coach.
It was a tough pill to swallow just because I felt like it was so blatant that we were going to foul. It wasn't a foul that would have endangered the other player at all. And at the end of the day, I definitely understand the rule as it was written. But if you just call a common foul there and put the guy at the line, then the players decide it.
Okay, let me throw this back at you. In practice, when you're going over late game situations on defense, do you mention or coach, and I'm not saying you don't, how to properly foul when you need to give a take foul?
Yes, it's something we talk about. But up until this year in that situation, I hadn't put enough emphasis on the defender making sure that the offensive player doesn't get behind him. So that's where on film, and even watching it over, and I watched it and I sent it to our signer and I talked it over with the official after. And he's like, yeah, basically just because the kid got a step on him, it didn't matter how he fouled him. Because the foul was on the hands, but it was the fact that he had to reach ahead to make it. That's why it was called the intentional.
I mean, it's a very unpopular call. I put up a post about it a little while ago. It's very unpopular, and by rule, the official is correct. You know, I didn't see the play, but you have to make a play on the ball. You can't wrap a guy from behind and just grab his arms. You know, that's an intentional foul in high school. That's a flagrant one foul in college. So I think the more awareness we can bring to the rules as far as adding an aspect of coaching to where we're letting the kids know about the rules. Look, you're not allowed to, in a late game situation like this, if we're down one point and we're a defender trailing the play, you can't just grab them. You got to try to hustle and get in front of them try to be less. It's a tough call, man. I understand why you were upset, and it's like, oh, just let the kids decide it. But that's why I throw it back at you and I say, okay, do we coach and tell them the right way how to foul? Do the kids know that you're not allowed to just grab the guy? Because by rule, it's an intentional foul. Me personally, I try to avoid calling in this situation an intentional foul as much as I can. I try to put a quick whistle on something. I try to talk them out of something if I can. But ultimately, each official is going to make their own decision. I think the majority of them might go intentional foul in that case. I don't know, high school game, I think you might see an intentional more, but these plays have come up in college, and the national coordinator will talk about them and will say, this is an intentional foul, or this is a flagrant one foul. So this is what we're being taught to call.
Yeah, and you know, I think you guys are exactly right. It's almost like our game is – relied more on a special teams atmosphere at times. You've got to spend time. We spend a lot of time telling our kids not to foul, and then all of a sudden we want them to foul, you know, to send a team to a line at the end of the game or what have you. And then if they don't know how to do it, it puts us in a bad spot. I'm not saying, Jeff, that's what happened, but I've been in a situation several times. We would call it zero because we're not playing any D. I'm calling out zero. Let's get an immediate foul right now on the rebound, on the blockout, whatever it may be. And kids sometimes will just freeze because you haven't spent. So then we would go back and we started doing it in our pre-practice stuff. And we started walking through as opposed to, you know, doing bigs and littles or what have you. We'd walk through it sometime on late game situations. Okay, we're down whatever three. We need to foul on the inbounds pass. How do we do that? You can't grab the jersey. You can't wrap your arms around. You've got to maybe body them up and get your hands up in the air and get into them. Now it eliminates that subjective stuff that always gets coaches riled up.
Paul, so I have a question for you. I personally, if my team's going to foul, I tend to tell the officials. Do you find that beneficial if a coach tells you, hey, we're going to foul, or does that not really affect how you're going to call something?
That's great information to know. When a coach comes up to us after a timeout and lets us know his intent is to foul right away, we want to put a whistle on it on the first touch. If they don't tell us, we maybe think they're going for a steal or trying to play defense. So, that's definitely good information to share.
I've actually done it the other way. I don't remember who we talked to on the podcast.
That was Greg White.
Greg White said that he tells officials that he's not going to foul so that his team could play more aggressive because he feels like officials are less apt to blow the whistle. Greg White from Arkansas said that. And I actually did that in two games this year, and it actually worked. Like, I told my team, play super aggressive. If they get called for a foul, I'm going to live with it. But play super aggressive. I'm going to tell the officials we're not intending to foul. And lo and behold, it worked. So I don't know. Have you ever had an official tell you or a coach tell you we're not trying to foul, or have you never heard that, Paul?
I've probably heard everything, man. I've let me tell you, I got to write a book on all the things I've heard. You guys have no idea.
I have so many games too.
So
I have to thank Greg for that one because we're actually going to talk to him later tonight. I got to make sure I thank him for that because I just remember this conversation reminded me of that. So
This is great, guys. I really appreciate what's going on right now.
So what's the funniest thing you've ever had said to you that you can share on a G-rated podcast?
Oh, man. One problem with me is I don't have a great memory when it comes to stuff like this. One funny thing a coach has said, probably just like cursing at his team. Or like, oh, my guy sucks. This guy sucks. He can't shoot. Yeah, I've had that a couple of times. There's one coach in particular loves to make fun of his team and, like, bash his team. Right there at a fast break. I'll be running table side, and he said something similar to that. So
that's fun.
We appreciate that. Look, man, we got to be out here and having fun. So I think there's room for some jokes at the right time and for some smiles.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, coaches, what's the funniest thing a ref has said to you?
Goodness. Probably the funniest thing I've had. We're in a state tournament game, and our assistant coach is really just getting after the official, and I'd been on him a little bit throughout the game, but we'd had this little bit of a conversation going on, and I'd been joking around with him like Paul was saying, and he leans over to me, the official, as he runs by, literally just stops, points at me and says, I will take it off of him, but I am not taking it off of you again. And it was like, and so I turned to my assistant coach. I said, yeah, did you see that? Did you hear that? He's going to take it off of me. Now we're all in trouble, you know? So it creates that little bit of a levity in the game. And, you know, I think sometimes we all get wrapped up in it's the end of the world, this game or this possession this time, you know? And I'm not saying I was perfect in every game I coached, but as I look back at it, I think there were some great times working with officials when you really got to know them and you had some fun with them. And it wasn't just, you know, me against the world type of an attitude.
I got a question for you, Coach. Have you ever tried to purposely get a technical foul?
Yes.
I knew it.
And it didn't happen, and that pissed me off even more. I don't know if I can say that on this podcast.
Hey, you're fine.
That's good. You're good.
And again, it was when I was younger, and then as I got in my last probably 6-7 years of coaching, I couldn't get it to you. And part of it was I'd coached in the same area for 25 years. I knew the officials. I'd had their kids in class. I had fairly amount of good respect, I would think, from our local area about what we'd done with our program. But yeah, when I was younger, I tried like crazy several different times to get, and I had the official turn to me and he goes, "I'm not giving you one." And I'm just going, "How do you respond to that?" And I just, and then you just kind of back off and mill out like, okay, this is, it's not even worth it. And,
hey coach, I would have gave you one.
we know the answer to Jeff. Jeff's answer is yes, because he got ejected earlier this year. So
no, Jeff, we got to talk about that, by the way. We'll talk off air about that.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. I want to ask I have one more question. So I don't know. After I ask my final question, if you guys have any more questions for each other, I'll throw it back to you. But my one question that I have left is, is there a rule change that any of you would like to see that could improve the game? And I don't even know what the categories are or what. Just is there a rule change that you'd like to see in the game that you think could make the game better?
I mean, I'm a big shot clock guy in high school, yeah. So that's what I'm going to throw out there. I think it just makes the game flow a little bit better, especially. You know, and I've coached in Connecticut where we played a 35-second clock and then moved to a 30. And now in North Carolina, we don't have one. And it is absolutely brutal in late game situations. You know, you get down by 10 or 12 and you feel like you're coaching a different type of game. And there's plenty of skill that goes into coaching without a shot clock, too. So it's not to say, like, there's no good coaches. There's some really good coaches and know how to use it. It's just frustrating. So that'd be mine. And I think that would make things flow a lot better.
And, you know, Jeff, I completely concur with that. In Washington, we have a shot clock. And, you know, when we went to it, I was a little hesitant. And part of that is change, you know, kind of ruffles your feathers maybe a little bit. You get set in your ways over the years. But then as the years went on and we had the shot clock, I liked how it helped you manage the game a little bit too. And I felt like you could, there was a little more strategy involved, and as opposed to just, you know, maybe a team sitting on it or, you know, and not really playing the game the way I guess I foresee it should be. So I think it helps with the game. And you know, I think we tinker with the rules too many from the National Fed side of it. I think they should just leave it, let us get used to it, and then, you know, really enforce what's there and then move forward, you know, as opposed to, okay, you know, let's have these, you know, modifications state by state, you know, whatever it ends up being. But, yeah, the shot clock is something that I think needs to be instituted nationally.
Paul, what, from an official's perspective, does having a shot clock involved in the game make any difference in terms of the difficulty or ease of refereeing a particular game, in your opinion?
Well, that's all I've known is having shot clocks here in New York State. But definitely, because they've been changing and tweaking the shot clock rule last couple of years. I know in college this year now, it doesn't get the full reset on fouls where we stay in the front court. So if we have like a rebounding foul, in years past, it would get reset to 30. Now it stays stays where it is unless it's below 20. If it's below 20, it goes back to 20. So we have to stay up on the ongoing changing of rules.
Is there anything? Go ahead.
No. As far as like what rule changes I want to see in the game, to be honest with you, I don't think about that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter because, you know, like we as officials, and I know myself, I'm gonna be ready and adapt to what any kind of rule changes that come about. A lot of officials, but you hear officials complaining, "Oh, I don't like this rule. I don't think they should do this." That's just energy spent that I choose not to do. I don't partake in that. I focus on other things. I don't worry about what I can't control.
Totally understood. All right. Any of you guys have a question for one another before we wrap things up?
No, nothing at all. I mean, what a great opportunity. And, you know, Mike and Jason, you guys listening to Jeff talk about it, or Paul talk about where he's at with his podcast. You guys have done the same thing. What a great way to improve our game. Both of you guys in your podcasts.
Oh, thanks, Coach.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Appreciate that. Absolutely. I know, you know, we've known Paul just briefly, but you can tell, I'm sure, that, you know, he's working very, very hard at what he's doing, and we're trying to do the same. And so, again, I think the important thing, if you take nothing else from the details of the podcast, if you're out there listening, the fact that you have coaches and officials, we're all on the same page. And although sometimes you may see it as an adversarial relationship, the reality is that whether you're a coach or whether you're an official, what you're trying to do is to make the game of basketball better for everybody that's involved in it. And that's really what it comes down to.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah. I really appreciate I really appreciate you putting this together. And I don't know if this has happened before where there's been a podcast that we have a, you know, coach's perspective and a referee's perspective and some great insight in between. I don't know if this has happened in anywhere else, but it happened tonight. And we did some really good work today, and we could provide a lot of value for coaches, refs, and fans, players.
Absolutely.
Great job, guys. Seriously.
No question. I agree 100% with all that. Before we get out of here, go ahead.
And I would just jump in and say, I mean, some of the most productive relationships I've had with officials have often been after games, where they'll either ask me for the game film so they can break it down and talk through stuff. And I've started some really good relationships with officials that have done games and done a lot of them, just, you know, through conversations like we had tonight. And it gets everybody on the same page, because oftentimes there's so many rules out there, you know, and as coaches, we want to do right by our kids and know how to teach things the right way. And I don't think any official ever goes into a game and says, you know, I really want to screw this team, or and I don't think players go into games saying, oh, I want to make this official's job harder. And I think the more conversation where everybody knows where everybody's coming from and has an understanding that everybody's just going out there to do their best, That's when the game's gonna flow the best and keep moving forward.
Oh, definitely, you're right on with that.
Just to add to that, to what you just said, I don't think players necessarily go into the games with a high level of respect for officials either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before they even know them, I don't think they have a high awareness on the job we do. I wish they could have a little bit more perspective, but that's what we're trying to do here tonight.
I think, too, the coaches can help set that up. You know, like, I think the more respect that coaches show officials and the job that they have, it sets that table for kids, because kids are going to follow the lead of their coaches. If coaches come in and are huffing and puffing, oh, well, this set of officials is awful. Like, what are kids going to think? You know, you're dealing with, at the high school level, you know, 14 to 18-year-old kids. If your coach is going into a game saying that, you can't expect the kids to act any different. But if you go in as a coach and say, you know, these guys have a hard job to do, and they're probably not going to do it perfect, you're not going to play a perfect game, so just go out and do your best, because they're doing their best. I think it sets those boundaries. And I think the other thing that I try and talk to players about is, number one, you're 15 years old, and this official in our game is at least probably 30, 35 or older, right? He doesn't want to be shown up by a 14-year-old. So it's not even worth doing that. You're not going to win that battle, and let me communicate with the officials. But I think it's all about, for coaches, you set the boundaries and the respect level. Your kids are going to follow, because at the end of the day, and Joe, you said this, like, the bench is a great teacher. And so, you know, if your players aren't achieving the standards that you set for them, then they're going to be sitting right next to you, you know? So it's our job as coaches to set that boundary.
And you know, the best thing about this, I'm just thinking how cool this conversation has been tonight. And we've gotten so far away from that. I don't know how it is in your guys' estates, but, you know, we spend a lot of our time doing rules revisions and rules clinicians online, as opposed to sitting down and talking to each other in a preseason meeting or a postseason meeting. We've gotten away from that. So, you know, stuff like this is going to do nothing but just help our game. And that's what's so cool about it is that we got a different perspective, but we all have the end result. We want it to be good for everybody.
I'm actually, you know, in my pursuit of reaching players, well, something pretty interesting happened last week. I was working in a local men's league. And after my game, I went to do a podcast with the league commissioner because he has a podcast. We were just going to do like a game review or whatever. So we wound up talking. And then next thing you know, I called over one of the players that I had just reffed. He's one of the better players in the league. And he was like complaining and whining all night to me and arguing with me. So that set up a pretty cool conversation. I called him over. I said, Spencer, come here. I want to talk to you. I said, get over here because I know him. My dad actually coached him. But you know he has fun during the game, so we go back and forth. So I wound up interviewing him, and he wound up reviewing some of the plays that happened that night, and I was able to provide clarity on why this wasn't a foul, why I didn't call this a foul, you know, why I did call this a foul. So it was pretty interesting. So that got me thinking. I want to start doing this more. I want to start interviewing players, and kind of answering any questions that they might have, and any misconceptions that they might have. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. I want to throw out one last story, and I wish I could, as we've been sitting here talking and listen to what you guys just said there, this story popped into my head, and I wish I could give it credit, but I don't remember where I heard it from. But one thing that we didn't talk about was some of the ways that we see fans and parents treating officials. But this story came from a coach who was having a problem with parents in the stands, you know, getting on officials and just setting a really negative tone, you know, up in the bleachers. And what this coach did was at some point during the preseason of, you know, before they started playing games, every parent of the players on his team had to come in at the end of practice and officiate 5 minutes of a team scrimmage at the end of practice to give them a perspective of what it was like to actually try and officiate a game. And the coach said that, you know, basically that shut down all the complaining about officials once people had an opportunity to really experience what it was like. And so I think that's something that if you're a coach out there and you want to set a tone for how officials should be treated, I think that's a fantastic way to make it very, very clear that officials do have a very difficult job and that to give people the perspective of what it takes to get out and referee a game. Because I think everybody, when you have the benefit of sitting back and not really having to take any responsibility for what you're saying or what, you know, what your phantom calls are from the stands, it becomes, people think it's pretty easy. But when you actually have to get out and do it, we all know it's a very, very difficult job. So I thought that was an interesting way of this coach getting the message across to people that, hey, we're not going to tolerate the abuse of the officials from the stands or from players like we've been talking about. So
yeah, that's great stuff.
All right, guys, Paul, I want to give you one more chance to just let everybody know where they can find all your stuff. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that out, and obviously Joe and Jeff, people have heard from you, and we'll put your guys's contact in the show notes as well, but I want to give you a chance, Paul, to just share everything that you're doing so that people have an idea of where they can find your stuff. And then we'll put that in our show notes as well.
Sure. I really appreciate the platform. So you can find Crown Refs on Instagram. It's Crown_Refs. That's my main platform is Instagram. So if you're on it, you're an official or you're a player or coach, a fan, you like what you heard tonight, come see me on there. It's Crown Refs everywhere else. So just type it in any search bar, whether it's Google, YouTube, type in Crown Refs. The podcast will pop up through Google, or you can go directly to Anchor where I record it, or you can find it on any other major platforms such as Spotify or iTunes or any other podcasting platform. Looking to continue to grow and build this brand and see where we go. As long as I continue to execute with the creation of content, we'll I think good things will happen. So we'll see where we can go, and look forward to collaborating with coaches and players and more people like yourself. So again, thank you for tonight. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Paul. Guys,
yeah, great
been
conversation.
Great. Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think it was very, very interesting. It's not a conversation that you get a chance, to have very often, and I'm sure people don't get a chance to hear it very often. So to Joe and Jeff, thanks for jumping back on with us. As always, we appreciate you guys and the support that you've given the Hoopheads podcast. And Jason, thank you as well. And Paul, it was great that you reached out to us. And I think this was a fantastic idea. And then I think the execution of it was even better. So it went very, very well. And to all three of you guys, thank you so much. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.